The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Jay Billis from ESPN, kind enough to join us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Jay, always nice to have you on the program. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the, based on the ratings anyway, seemingly renewed interest in the college basketball product, especially during this tournament. How surprised are you by the numbers?
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I wouldn't even call it renewed. I mean, our ratings have been up year after year. So, you know, the game's perfectly healthy. I mean, everything's compared to football now, which is been a juggernaut. You know, baseball gets less attention, basketball gets less attention, everything gets less attention because of football, but basketball is as healthy as it's ever been.
Jay, can you tell everybody where you stand on the expansion talk of the tournament itself?
I'm not for it. I don't think the reasons behind sort of the push for expansion are particularly good ones. You know, I tend to think that the regular season is valuable and you should have to earn your way into the tournament. And it's the fairest it can possibly be because every conference has an automatic bid to the tournament. And so you get to compete for that automatic bid with your peers with whom you chose to be in a league or a conference. And after that, it's the next best teams. So I don't see that how anybody's, you know, closed out of the tournament. And just because, you know, some team that you don't expect to win wins doesn't mean that other teams that didn't make it maybe just as good all of a sudden deserve to be in the tournament. I don't get that logic, frankly. And I don't see, you know, I think a lot of people are missing the fact that this is not an access tournament. This is not a deserving tournament. It's the national championship. And I don't think you throw banana peels in the way of the best teams by adding games onto this thing to decide who the national champion is. And by the time we start championship week, when all the conference tournament starts, everybody is de facto in the tournament. So if you want to be in that, then win the games against your peers and get in like NC State did this year, like some of the teams in the smaller conferences. It's not that difficult a concept.
Do you like the makeup of the committee or at least how the selection actually takes place?
No, but you know, it's a waste of time to discuss it because it's a closed community, and that's a plum job that administrators really covet, and it's never going to change. And that's why you have hundreds of bracketologists out there, because it's unbelievably easy to predict what they're going to do. It's become really formulaic, and everybody knows it. So sometimes when conferences complain about the number of teams they got in, you know, one of the things, it's like, look, man, it couldn't be clearer how this is going to go. So you got to schedule according to the way they do things. And the bottom of your league has to schedule differently. And when you schedule these games, you know, if you've got somebody down, you got to put your foot on the gas and get them way down and win by more. That's the way the system works. I don't think it's the right way to do it, but there's no sign over the years that it's going to change. And so you have to adapt. I think everybody has to adapt to the way things are being done.
Jay Billis from ESPN with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Obviously, being here in Atlanta, we talk about the fact that no teams from the state of Georgia have made the tournament despite the talent in this state. How do you, if you are at Georgia or Georgia Tech through your eyes, get these kids to stay?
Well, I mean, the short answer is to give them the best environment and the best coaches that you can, and then pay them appropriately. I mean, part of the problem that exists in college sports now isn't that there are no rules, like some of the old, you know, some of the coaches like to complain. It's that there are too many rules, and the one rule that they have is the schools can't pay the players. And as soon as that rule is removed, you can sign the players to contracts. Once they're signed to contracts, they're not going to move around as much. And, you know, that's a certainty. That's just a business certainty. And so that's the answer, is you have to get the right players and create an environment that they want to be in. I mean, I don't think it's that difficult conceptually. It may be difficult to pull off, but there is a lot of talent in the state of Georgia and Atlanta specifically. And if you want it to stay, you have to make it attractive for them to stay.
It's interesting. You use the word difficult. I don't know if you can figure it out. I'm not telling you there's a formula. But when you think back to when you were playing in college and all the years up until literally today, in your mind, how much more difficult might it be to be a head coach in this game these days compared to maybe what it used to be?
Well, it's a lot easier because you make a lot more money in that regard. You're flying around private. You know, you've got better facilities. You've got a lot. There's a lot that's way easier. It's more difficult in certain instances now because, you know, a coach when I played could say my way the highway. Now there's a highway. So you say my way the highway, they can take the highway. You know, we couldn't take a highway before. So you may have to treat players differently. And the truth is you could lie to players back then and get away with it. Because once they were signed, they're not going anywhere. And if you did want to go somewhere, you had to give up a year of your life to do it. And you don't have to do that anymore. And it's not a court rule. The NCAA made this rule. And so, you know, the coaches have to live with it. And do, as an older person, you know, I'm 60 years old now, do I like seeing 1,000 players in the portal? No, but it's better. Like, I think the players should have the right to leave if they're unpaid. If they signed a contract. But you know, when you say that, then you also have to look at all the coaches that are moving around right now. And they were under contract, and they had years left on those contracts, and they just bolted to another job, and everybody just accepts it. And Trev Alberts, the athletic director at Texas A&M, just signed a contract at Nebraska and left like days or weeks after he signed that multi-year contract. And you want to tell a player that they shouldn't leave when they see something better and they want to better their situation? And one of the things that some of the old heads like to say is, you know, these, they call them kids to infantilize them when they're adults, but they're saying these kids, you know, there's no accountability, and the first sign of adversity, they up and leave. Well, first of all, I don't think those things are true, but they want to say, okay, you young player, you have to make a binding decision out of high school when you have no college experience, but you can't be trusted to make a decision with your future when you're older and you have college experience. So I've experienced this. I don't like it. I want to leave. That can't be trusted. They have to stay there, and they're stuck with the decision that they make out of high school. That really makes no sense when you think about it.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
What about the guardrails that everybody uses, that term now, when it comes to NIL? Do you see any way, aside from the contracts, to kind of get a grasp on this thing, a salary cap, anything along those lines?
Well, first of all, when the term guardrail is used, it really means restriction. So how can you never hear coaches say we need guardrails on coaches' salaries and we need guardrails on coaches' movement and we need guardrails on what programs are spending? They don't say that. They only say it with regard to players. We need guardrails with regard to players. What they're saying is we need restrictions. So I hear salary cap, like, you know, salary cap is what a business wants when they want to limit cost of acquiring talent. So if you want to do that in the NFL or the NBA, there are salary caps. But what they don't, what the people are calling for that in college sports don't acknowledge is the players in the NFL and the NBA get 50% of the revenue that they split up. And they agree to a salary cap in collective bargaining in partnership with the league. That's not happening in college. Like, the truth is, these college players are cheap. They are really cheap. And if they really wanted competitive balance and all this stuff, which they don't, but if they really wanted it, they would revenue share. And there's no revenue sharing. Like, the SEC is not sharing its money with anybody else, nor is the Big Ten. They're not doing that. But if they wanted a salary cap, what they'd have to admit is we want to pay the players directly. And if you pay them a certain percentage, I'm sure the players would agree to a salary cap because they make much more. But it's really not a big deal to fix this if you want to call it broken. I don't think it's broken. But if you want to improve it, all you have to do is say, all right, no restrictions. School can pay whatever they want to the players. The market will normalize quickly. They know exactly what these players are worth to them, just like they don't need a salary cap for coaches. They know exactly what to pay and exactly how much they're willing to pay and then what that's going to get them in the market. But if they sign them to contracts, all these problems they're claiming go away the next day.
Speaking of coaches, you've had an opportunity now for decades to sit down with these guys pre-games at tournaments. When guys get knocked out, you have a chance to catch up with them during the off season. Are there a couple of guys that you've found more, I don't want to say interesting, but that you enjoy, where you, after maybe a couple of times with a guy, you go, wow, I was wrong about him, and I can't wait till the next time I actually get a chance to sit down and talk with him?
No. I mean, I enjoy my interaction with all of them. There's very few times have I ever had an issue with a coach. Now, we may agree or disagree on certain policy issues. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I have no problem with any of these guys. They're fantastic, all of them. They're all different, and you may agree with the way one person does it or like the way another person does it more than this one. But I think they're fantastic. So I've never had preconceived notions with coaches. You know, you get to know them and make your decisions just like you do with any person, but I've never gone into any interaction with a coach thinking, oh, this isn't going to be good. I've never had that issue.
Yeah. I think some guys probably you talk more basketball with, other guys you talk different subjects with. As you get to know guys, I would imagine the conversations might be a little bit different over the years.
Well, yeah, some you're better friends with than others, but that's true in any endeavor in life. But I talk basketball 95% of my interactions with people. Sometimes I wind up talking about, they'll ask about policy issues, what do you think about that, you know, things like that. And then you get to, I've been doing this for 30-plus years and played and coached and all that stuff, so I know a lot of people. But, I can't think of a negative interaction I've had with a coach over the last, you know, 30-plus years.
Hey, before we let you go, Jay, I don't think we've ever talked to you about the experience playing overseas in Spain and especially Italy. How do you capsulize, if people ask, what it was like to play over there?
It was awesome. I loved it. It was my level. I mean, I got drafted into the NBA and by the Dallas Mavericks and went to camp and all that. But, you know, I was a star player in Europe and really enjoyed it. It was a little different back then because the European Union hadn't formed. So there were only two foreigners per team for European teams. So it was really competitive for jobs. So there might've been two Americans or one American and a Yugoslav or one American and a Russian, stuff like that. So it was really competitive for jobs, but it was a blast. You know, some players didn't enjoy as much as I did, being, you know, having to immerse yourself in a foreign culture like you had to do. But I loved it, especially Italy. I mean, Spain I enjoyed, but Italy I really enjoyed. I thought it was a blast.
Jay, today's the 32nd anniversary of the Duke-Kentucky game, and I don't know where you watched that game.
I was on the bench. I was an assistant coach.
Okay, so I had forgotten that. So as people are talking about it today, the Christian Laettner game, the shot game, whatever the hell people are calling it now, what are your recollections 32 years later?
It was maybe the most well-played game I had ever seen in person or on television. You know, of course you remember the ending because that's the iconic thing that they keep showing over and over again. But it was an unbelievably well-played game. I mean, both teams shot over 50%. The shot-making was fantastic. It was back and forth the whole game. Kentucky was really good, and Duke was a great team. It was just really, really fun to watch. You know, I certainly had a rooting interest that day, but, you know, Jamal Mashburn was playing for Kentucky, and Rick Pitino was coaching the team, and it was an extraordinarily well played game that was just a pleasure to be a very small part of. I played a forgettable role, but it was a blast.
Well, people remember your 82 recruiting class, and I think Kentucky for different reasons was kind of in the same boat coming off of probation, and that class kind of launched them, as did your class in 82 at Duke.
Yeah, there were some similarities. And you know, John Pelfrey and Jim Farmer, all those Sean Woods, all those guys came up together and kind of had to scratch and claw to get that program back to where it was competitive for a championship. And that team could have easily won it that year. They were really hard to guard. You know, their screening actions and all that were really difficult for Duke to handle. But it was the start of something amazing. And what they started, those guys were talking about, you know, led to one of the great runs, I think, in college basketball history, where Kentucky went to the championship game 3 years in a row, and they were an overtime period away from a repeat, or a three-peat, excuse me, with two different coaches. You know, Rick Pitino won one in 96, came with an overtime period of beating Arizona to win the second one, then Tubby Smith wins it in 98. Just an extraordinary run, which you just don't, you know, you didn't see before UCLA, and then you're probably never going to see again. I mean, to have a chance to win it three times, maybe Connecticut will be able to do it, but it's extraordinary.
Hey, Jay, I'll show maybe my ignorance. So were you on the bench for both Vegas games in back-to-back years?
Yes.
So can I just ask, kind of thinking about how a one-year period, you know, that team – what Vegas did, then all of a sudden Duke comes back and beats them in a season when Vegas hadn't really been challenged all year.
Well, Grant Hill is the reason. You know, in 1990, Duke didn't have Grant Hill. And, you know, Duke had, that year had Al Abdelnaby and Phil Henderson and Robert Bricky. It was an outstanding team. Bobby Hurley was a freshman. And Christian Laettner was there as a sophomore. But the following year, you know, Grant Hill came in. And you know, Vegas was the better team. I think in a seven-game series, Vegas would have won. But, you know, it's a one-game-and-out thing. And Duke had a fantastic game, and the game plan I thought was really good. I'm a little biased there. But, Grant Hill was the big difference. I mean, I still think, even with Christian Laettner in the mix, I think Grant Hill is the best player Duke's ever had. Christian was the most accomplished, and rightfully so. I mean, he was a stud, but Grant was the best player.
So we missed out on what really should have been his NBA career because of the feet.
Well, for 7 years, you didn't. For the first 7 years before he was injured, and he wound up playing close to 20. I don't remember the exact number. But the first 7 years, Grant Hill's numbers were up with – there were only a handful of players that could match his numbers, scoring, rebounding, assists, steals, all that. Guys like LeBron, Bird, Jerry West, Oscar Robertson. That was the sport he was in. And I referred to him as the Sandy Koufax of the NBA. That Sandy Koufax really didn't play all that long in Major League Baseball. But when he did, his numbers were dominant. His performance was dominant. Grant Hill was the same way. Had he not been injured with that just catastrophic foot injury, ankle injury, I think it would have been him and Michael Jordan.
Fascinating commentary. Always a great conversation with you, Jay Billis. I know you got to run. We got to run. Hopefully we can do it again real soon. I think we're just scratching the surface on some things.
Yeah, we dove deep into the tournament there. That way, I hope people.
Hey,
really...
Jay, who do you like? Hey, who do you like?
UConn's the best team.
Do they win?
Well, I think they will, but who knows? That's why we're going to play. But yeah, they're the best team.
Well, there you go. That's some tournament talk right there. More tournament talk maybe in a couple of weeks when the Final Four rolls around.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, guys.
Jay Billis with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands. An easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.